What's up, champs? Welcome to another episode of the Short Shifts Fantasy Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Keeping Carlson. I'm your host, Jeremy Brasillo, and joining me tonight, as always, my pal and yours, Shams Benamor. Shams, how are you doing this Thursday evening?
Doing okay, just crossing my fingers that we're not shaking our heads when we look at the accountability channel in about a month from now for about this episode.
I definitely regret some of the calls I've had earlier this season, but that's kind of the fun of it. I think we should take credit for some of our calls, such as Evan Rodriguez saying that you should probably drop him, and then he's got a point in like five straight games. That's because of us. It wasn't a bad call. It was we unjinxed him. But with all of that aside, let's get into the headlines. First of all, the Washington Capitals broke their alternating goalie pattern. Unfortunately, it resulted in Logan Thompson's first loss of the year. He had been 0-7 to, or 7-0, not 0-7, 7-0 to start the year, lost the Leafs in overtime on a game that they really should have won. They blew it in the last 5 minutes. I will say, Thompson was not the cause of that loss. His goals saved above expected was still positive despite giving up 4 goals. I watched it live and he looked really good. It'll be interesting to see what they go to Friday and Sunday. If I had to guess, is they're going to go back to the alternating or go back to Lindgren Friday and Thompson Sunday, but they do have a Sunday-Monday back-to-back. I'm actually kind of interested in Logan Thompson. In previous years, he's actually been a very good goalie, granted on a very good Vegas team. He just can't stay healthy. And Lindgren has looked human this year. He hasn't been bad, but if Thompson is actually playing this well, I could see him getting, you know, 2 out of every 3 starts instead of 1 out of every 2. What do you think? Do you think that's too soon to call that?
I think it's worth the shot. And the nice thing is like I picked him up when that news first came out where the coach was noncommittal with his goalie rotation. And the nice thing is that others, I feel like at all the cap starts for about the next 3 games are on off nights. So if you think he's going to get, like, at worst, half of those games, you're still going to get fit him in. Or even worse, if he does one, it's going to be either that Sunday, Monday, and you got either close out your week or open up the week with a goalie start. So I feel like it's a great spot if you're in a position where you don't need every single game start from your players. Pick him up, and he could turn into a person that could potentially be, you know, an everyday starter, and you know how many leagues that is just a boon to have.
The one downside is the Caps' upcoming schedule is going to be a real test of whether or not they're legit or not. Their next couple of games are at Colorado, at Vegas, at Utah on the second half of a back-to-back. Then they come home to play Colorado and the Devils. Those are some tough games on top of the fact that they just lost to the Leafs. Another point I'd like to make is that we are coming up on the Thanksgiving week, which is a disaster for streaming because almost every team plays both Wednesday and Friday. So if you are one of those people who rosters 1 or 0 goalies, having 2 goalies or even 3 goalies going into that week will help you leave less points on the bench. In some of my 1-goalie leagues, I'm looking to add guys like Thompson and ride them through Thanksgiving, because even if they only get 2 starts that week, it's better than leaving a guy on the bench for all 3 starts or streaming in some fourth liner who happens to play Tuesday. Next up, we have another goalie news. Joel Blomqvist got sent to the AHL. He hasn't been bad, but I think they want Jerry and Nedeljkovic to take over the net. Actually, I had an Athletic article I quoted from, let me find the guy's name to give him some credit. It is Josh Yohe on The Athletic, their Pittsburgh beat writer. He says that plenty of people in the organization want to see Jerry receive an extended amount of games in the NHL simply to see what's there. Sounds like they're eager to find if Jerry can help them this season or not. There's never been a question about his physical talent, but rather his mental and psychological state. They expect to see Jerry play a good bit during the rest of the month, unless he immediately implodes upon his return. Make no mistake, the Penguins coaching staff and members of the front office want Jerry to snatch the number 1 job. So I think that's a pretty reasonable take by their beat writer. Granted, it sounds like there's no information here, no inside information. I'd be interested in Jerry if he's on the wire. I'd also be interested in Nedeljkovic. Pittsburgh's been bad, but I think their goalie could have value.
I'm a little bit hesitant with just the team overall. Now, if one of them gets a decent amount of starts, I'm fine to live with it because, you know, I'm willing to take volume basically in any perspective. But if it starts getting into a situation that there's even a hint of a split, you don't want to have that situation where, like, people picked up Nedeljkovic for the stream and then ended up with, like, a minus four because, like, it feels like you're not getting, like, at least with the Blackwoods, you could get that random, like, 12-point game. I'm not sure if that's around with just how the team's going to be because they just don't let that many shots come. But you also have the ultimate downside of just them letting in six shots and getting pulled. So that's where I'm a little bit hesitant on, like, streaming them in. But if Jari ends up getting to the net, like you said before, then I'd be interested because at least you could ride game to game and then hopefully smooth it out.
There was also a complete side point. That article was also really interesting because the writer went into the fact that some of their defensive struggles are coming from the fact that Erik Karlsson appears to be incapable of defending on his right side. Like, anybody coming down the right side of him, he is just getting burnt badly. And they had three or four examples from games where he just gets blown by on the right side and can't do anything about it. The writer commented that that's one of those things where it's fine if it's your third pairing defenseman doing that. But when you've got a guy playing 22 minutes a night who can't defend one of his sides, it's a really bad sign for your goalies. Again, that's a Josh Yohe on The Athletic. If anybody wants to read that, it was a pretty good read from a kind of insider on that team. Next up, we've got injuries. Tell us what happened to Tage Thompson, or I guess you heard about it on Tuesday's show, but do we have a bit more news now?
So by the sounds of it, they're both considered day-to-day, so there's nothing for him or Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. So there's no real worry about the length. What the interesting thing is that the lines did end up changing from when they were played mid-game when they were talking about it on Tuesday, is that Peterka's actually with Cousins and Quinn, and then Tuck is with McLeod and Benson. And while you think, oh, crap, Tuck is kind of on an island, McLeod has actually been pretty decent. He scored his fifth goal of the season this year and was actually assisted by Tuck. So he got that point there. And the nice bonus is that Tuck is actually now on power play one, taking Zucker's spot, and then Zucker's taking Thompson's spot. So now it's Tuck, Cousins, Zucker, Peterka, Dahlin on power play one. So obviously it's a downgrade to be without Thompson, but Tuck is actually maybe making a little bit out of this by getting to play with on the power play one. And then Peterka still has Cousins to play with, who is still an interesting center. So not as much of a downgrade.
I do think the fact that they promoted McLeod to that, kind of jumping over Cousins, I think gives me the idea that this is a short-term injury. They aren't preparing for these to be the lines for the next 2 or 3 months. It definitely sounds like, I would guess within the next week or so, you see Tage Thompson back. And that's always a good thing for hockey. More goalie news. I'm just going to run through a couple and then let you comment. Pyotr Kochetkov left the game against, they played Utah yesterday with an injury. No update there yet. Same with Darcy Kemper, who left the game for LA. And then Sam Ersson pulled up lame again during practice, and sounds like there's also no news on that one. Which of those, I guess, of the backups for these three goalies, which of them would you be most interested in if you have the chance?
So the interesting thing is that probably the best backup out of all those is Rittich. However, they only play three more times in the next 2 weeks because they only play Saturday this week, and then they only play 2 days next week with one of them being a Saturday. So even though he is the best, I probably have the least interest in him. So the next would go for me is, I forget his first name, but Martin from Carolina, because he got a little bit of play last year. And it's kind of like a poor man's Skinner, is that you're not going to like his overall stats, but if you get values from wins in either categories league or a decent point boost from wins in a points league, I feel like the team is still good enough that even with him not being the highest pedigree goalie, that they can ride him for a few wins and you'll get value that way.
I would say that Rittich is the only one I'm interested in, and it's only if the injury is, you know, a bit more on the multi-week scale. I don't trust Spencer Martin or Ivan Fedotov, especially Martin. The Carolina Hurricanes suppress shots a lot. So you may get a goalie who's got a, you know, 880 save percentage on 19 shots. And that's not good. That may not even be a positive fantasy game if they lose that game 3-2 or something. So maybe there's some value to mine. Like I mentioned, there's upcoming weeks where you would benefit from having a second or third goalie on the roster. Maybe that's worth it. I just don't like any of those guys. Last but not least, we've got two quick hits and then a more important outjury. We've got Couturier is also out for Philly. That's kind of fringe relevant. Dakota Joshua returns this week for Vancouver. He's playing on the fourth line and not on the power play. So he may not score as much as last year, but he was one of those guys who was worth a good 3 to 4 hits a game. Kind of hope he gets into a hitting competition with Kiefer Sherwood and they just become the Hanson brothers out there. And finally, Colorado's getting reinforcements. Druin and Nichushkin, both Druin's returning tonight, I think, and Nichushkin will be available for the next game, it sounds like. What do you have there, Shams?
So with this, it's pretty safe. Now, we haven't seen any lines, so none of this is certain. But I think that we could just kind of do the best six players are going to be in some sort of combination on the top six. The interesting thing for me to watch out is that I think all of us were pretty much thinking is that Mittelstadt has been doing decent enough to stay as the top power play person, even when people started coming back. But it interesting is that Evan Rawal was talking to the coach Bednar before last night's game or the previous game. And basically he said that he was wanting to keep the power plays the same unless it started to sputter. And if I remember correctly, they've only had one power play goal in the last three games. So we'll still have to watch the power play practice as we get to the game or if they have a skate at all. But I don't think Mittelstadt's actually 100% safe on that top power play, which could be a very bad mark for him.
And we'll have more on that after the break, because Mittelstadt is one of our permission to drop candidates right after this ad break.
Elon here. I love this time of year. I'm always looking to see what are the best headphone deals I can get. I'm obsessed with podcasts. Of course, that means I'm obsessed with headphones. So I'm always looking, what's going on with Black Friday, Cyber Monday? Are there any amazing deals for me? You know what? With Raycon, it doesn't matter what time of year it is because you get an amazing deal on premium audio every day of the year. But that doesn't mean they're not having any sales for Black Friday or Cyber Monday. Far from it. They're actually doubling down on their amazing value by offering listeners of Keeping Carlson up to 30% off site wide. You got to check out Raycon. They've got this active noise cancellation really handy if you're at work listening to music or you're walking down the street. Let's say you listen to a podcast where the audio isn't so perfect. They're a little bit quiet. It comes in handy, trust me, to have that active noise cancellation. I want to be able to make sure I hear all of my content. Also, the Raycons feature 32-hour battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. And guess what? Here's the thing. Raycon's quality rivals some of the biggest names in premium audio, but the Raycons start at just half the price as the other guys. So they're already an incredible deal even before you factor in their Black Friday or Cyber Monday offer of up to 30% off site wide. Raycon's everyday earbuds are also available in a variety of vibrant colors, so you don't have to just have the standard issue white or black earbuds sticking out of your ears. I personally got the purple. I had the option. Blue also looks really nice. Anyways, you know what colors are. You choose whatever one that's good for you. And guess what? Now's the perfect time to scoop them up if you haven't already. And don't worry, if you're not as impressed as I am, Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee, so you really can't lose. It's time to save big for Black Friday or Cyber Monday. Go to buyraycon.com/THPN today to get up to 30% off site-wide. That's right, you'll get up to 30% off everything on Raycon's website when you go to buyraycon.com/THPN. If you haven't guessed, I like watching hockey. And hey, watching hockey on TV, that's pretty good. Watching hockey live, oh man, nothing beats it. And of course, you got to get those tickets to go to those games. And that's where our friends over at Game Time come in. Game Time has a new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. Game Time Picks filters out the fluff to show you only incredible deals on great seats so you don't have to waste time searching through thousands of tickets. I decided to take a look at what our West Coast friends have in terms of options to go see a Canucks game. Man, I'm seeing a beauty over on November 16th, Saturday. The Blackhawks are in town to play the Canucks. You can see Connor Bedard in the flesh. And it's really great when you go to Game Time. You can see the cheapest price. You know, I'm seeing $94 for a Section 313, Row 15 ticket. You can also see what are the good deals. That, you know, they'll filter out for you. So they have a $210 ticket. That's just a really good deal. Super lower bowl, center, pretty much the best you can see. And by the way, I can see a view using the app of what you'll see from the tickets. You know exactly what you're getting. Game Time Picks shows you only the best values on tickets. Last minute deals on tickets right up to the start of the event and even an hour after it starts. Also, there's exclusive flash deals and sponsored deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, whatever. There's also zone deals where you pick the section and Game Time picks the seats for big savings. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time Picks. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code THPN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code THPN for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time! The quest for the Stanley Cup has begun. The puck's dropped on the 24-25 season. Get in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple, like picking a team to win. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. You know me. I like looking at the futures. Let's take a look at the Stanley Cup odds here. Winnipeg Jets, at the time I'm recording this, they're the top team in the league, getting no respect from the odds makers. I'm seeing Florida, Edmonton, Carolina, Dallas, the Rangers, the Leafs, Colorado, Devils, all with better odds to win than the Jets. So if you disagree, that's something you can take a look at. And hey, if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
Welcome back, everyone. Next up, we have a new segment that we do every year or so. It's getting to be that time where we kind of know what a player is going to be for this year. We've kind of seen the deployment. We've seen the talents. Like, you can make some decisions about your roster, and there may be some players that are highly owned or highly drafted that you're just looking for our permission to drop. And we asked in our Discord and got a number of suggestions there, along with some of our own and some from the rest of the Short Shifts crew. So we're just going to run through 15 different players and give our take on how droppable they are. First up, from Sir Kevin, Troy Terry, who is 100% owned in the Cupful. I think he looks like pretty much the same player as he was last year. He was on and off the wire last year, if I remember correctly. And I think he falls into the category of probably should be rostered in every league, but not necessarily on your team. Being a right wing with an off day schedule, some managers may need that, not every team. So you have my permission to drop Troy Terry if you don't think he's helping you. Jams?
I'm in the same boat. I think it's I'm a little bit more interested in him this time around because they've been sticking him with a line with Zegras and Vetrano. So it's a pretty nice setup, but they have been cute in the past and had Terry be forced to basically own his own line to be with two nobodies from a fantasy perspective. So as long as he's with those other two, I'm a little bit more open to him. But if he starts to drift away, then my interest drops quickly.
Next up, we've got Nazem Kadri, who's only got 8 points so far this year. What do you think there?
This is a position for me is that talking about line mates is that with how Calgary's been playing, they've been not getting a lot of offense. So now they're starting to get cute with their lines. They basically now have like a top nine. And now Kadri is with Papasil and Kuzmenko. And I think all of us know that here's a hint. We're not even going to bring up Kuzmenko because we already said he's a drop. So shows my interest on that. And then the worst part of it all is that being with on power play, they call it power play too, but he's, I guess it's the one without Uyghur, so you could call it too. He's with Backlund, Kuzmenko, Papasil, and Anderson on the power play. So they're splitting both. And my personality is that I was kind of close to cutting him or recommending to cut him a week or two ago. he may not be the absolute worst. There might be another person you should cut before you get to Kadri. But if he's your worst player, depending on your roster construction, I'm fine with cutting him, even if he is the top player for the team.
I disagree there. I would not be cutting Kadri. He is shooting 3.2 times per game, and his 5v5 on ice shooting percentage is like 3%. I think there's more points to come. He may be closer to the 55 or 60 point player than the 75 point player he was when his team was good, but I think he's going to end up back on a good line and perform well. I would not drop Kadri. Next up, we have a trio of defensemen, all 100% owns. I think we have a fourth one that I may add. Let me see. No, he's not 100%. So the trio of defensemen 100% owned are from Chris, Noah Hanifin, from Shams, Shane Gossespierre, and from Trev, Brock Faber. I would be okay dropping Hanifin for sure. Like I said last episode, I just don't think all three Vegas defensemen can be valuable at the same time. I'm more hesitant on Faber and Gossespierre, even though I think they're kind of like the same style where they're going to get a lot of ice time and power play time, but somehow not get any points in that. I don't really have strong opinions on whether or not these guys are droppable. Maybe you can save me and have an opinion here.
So for me, it's that I'm with you, Hanifin. He's basically the worst of basically Theodore and Petrangelo. He's not in an offensive position to be on power play one, so his offense can't shine. And he doesn't have the banger stats of Petrangelo to protect him there. So he's just kind of in the middle. So maybe as a streamer guy, pick him up, let him go. But I wouldn't be, holding on to him for my roster. Faber, he was the guy that I had the most, I'm not sure feeling. I would be probably keeping him just because he sees the ice so much. And it's kind of weird is that he's shooting and blocking less. So he's actually scoring about the same amount as last year. Now, it would have been nice to have a, upward trend since he is young, but maybe the points will start to come or the hits and blocks will start to come. And I'm a little bit more interested into him because he does have that ice time. Now, for me, is Shane Gossespierre kind of was on my, just not even on my radar, and I'm actually playing against him in a league, and I just started looking at his stats. Now, he came out of the NHL, the start of the season with a bullet. He had, I think it was four goals in a row for four games. But if you take that out, he has just been horrendous, just both with just the overall shots he's not doing. He's not doing blocks or hits. So right now, I just think it's that he's basically right now, and he's on the third pairing of a team that has so many defensemen, that he's basically how you thought about a Boqvist or a random player like that, because he's being on the third pair. He's on a power play that's doing well, but without him. It's not like the Carolina's not getting any power play points. They're just doing it without him. It's just kind of that weird situation where their setup doesn't follow through. That I am of the mind is that he wasn't a long-term hold last year, power play one, and both of those power plays are clicking at the same rate. Last year, Detroit was about 21%. Carolina's 21% today. So if he wasn't great last year, I don't see why he's a must hold this year.
I agree with that. Another thing to consider is Alexander Nikishin may be coming over by the end of the year. So by the end of the year, he may have some competition for power play one that isn't the corpse of Brent Burns. Next up, we have from Elon, Alex Laferriere. This one's a tough one because, like you said, the Kings only play three games in the next week and a half. But I actually think I'd be willing to hold Laferriere. He's shooting 22% on the season, which is a bit high, but I looked into his NCAA stats since he kind of skipped the AHL, and he looks like he's a 14%-ish shooter anyway, so the 22 isn't that unreasonable, especially when he's playing on power play one, where you're expected to get better looks. The peripherals are nice, too. 2.3 shots, 1.6 hits, and half a block per game. Plus, he's been locked into power play one, although it's kind of a bad power play one, so maybe they'll switch that up. I think he's the rare third line guy who contributes often enough to be worth holding, especially at a sparse right wing position. I could see his final stat line actually looking something similar to what Blake Coleman does. 25-ish goals, 20-ish assists, 2.5 to 3 shots a game, more than a hit per game. And then LeFerrier is going to have some power play points in there that Coleman usually doesn't get. So I think Blake Coleman's always a nice third line guy to have on your team a lot of times. So I would be trying to hold LeFerrier unless I'm really starting to feel the pressure and feel desperate for wins.
And the nice thing is that when we talk about third line, the Kings third line is different than most third lines. You're going to get a lot of play. They have Byfield on that line. So think of it as almost like a line 2B because it's basically just depending on if they want to be defensive with Deneau or more offensive with Byfield. So I'm happy with keeping him unless you're in a shallow league where the two games really hurt.
Yeah, no matter who his center is, it's going to be pretty good. Speaking of centers, next up from Downey, Ryan O'Reilly, he's on that struggling Nashville team. The advanced stats are all a bit low, but he's also such a frustrating player to own because he doesn't shoot, he doesn't hit, and he gets mostly assists. So if he's not on the score sheet, he's tanking your team. What do you think on here?
So for me, it's not him that I'm looking at. I'm looking at his line mates, and it's Forsberg and Stamkos. And I know Stamkos hasn't been starting off really well, but I'm still of the mind that it's Stamkos, that I'm going to give him a little bit more leash than, say, if it was another player. So if you brought him, because you drafted him knowing that he's not going to be giving you all the peripheral stats, that having that ability to point off of either himself getting a feed for one of those guys or just, you know, doing an easy assist on a power play or on even strength, I'm a little bit more in there. Now, if you were expecting the shots and the hits and whatnot, then I'd be a little bit more worried. But I feel like if you're looking for points and power play points, I have a feeling that they're going to regress because maybe I'm a little bit too hopeful here. Those are great line mates to be with, and I don't think it's going to stay like this the whole year.
I just can't see Nashville being this bad for the whole year. I think they may not be a playoff team anymore just because they've tanked themselves so hard with the start. But if they got hot down the stretch, I think they could make things interesting. I think Saros is going to get a lot of games. I think pretty much everyone in their top six, except for maybe Gustav Nyquist, are buy lows. Like, their entire power play one is a great great buy low option, like Marchessault, Stamkos, even Forsberg to some extent. So I'd be holding on to O'Reilly, as frustrating as he's been, and definitely trying to snatch him up if he does get dropped in the league. Another top line, top power play type player who's people are considering dropping, from Trev, Rickard Rakell, who's actually 100% owned. I was a bit surprised by that. I think it's mostly because of Pittsburgh's good schedule this week. I'm still holding despite the cold stretch. He kept power play one when Rust came back, which is a good sign. He's played 20 plus minutes in 4 of the last 5 games. Pittsburgh's kind of going to be a roller coaster this season, but I think I'll hold until the deployment sinks. By that, I mean either he's not playing with Crosby at even strength or he's not on power play one. So kind of hoping that he keeps that. I think he's got enough peripherals to make, you know, a 45 to 60 point season pretty fantasy relevant. What do you think on Rakell?
Yeah, this one, as I was torn, is that I have a feeling I'm kind of the same boat, is that being with either having that power play one really just makes me a little bit more forgiving if he has like a bad night. But as long as that's around, I'm willing to keep him. But if they start getting cute with, say, like two defensemen, or if Russ takes his place, then I might be a little bit more willing to jettison him.
Next up, we have the last fully 100% owned guy, and that's Elias Lindholm. Again, his shooting percentage and on-ice shooting percentage are a bit low. The shots are down from last year, but the hits and blocks are actually up. He's on pace for over 100 of both of them, which is rare for a forward. I think there's some hope, but I also am quickly losing faith in Boston. Like, unlike Nashville, I do not think Boston will turn it around. And they've been getting cute with lines, and he's not always playing with Pasternak. The nice thing is he's by far their best center, so he should stick to power play one. This is another one that I'm like trying to hold, but running out of patience.
You know that I was basically harping on Lindholm for, I think it was like, I'm not sure why, like, I have nothing against him, but like, I just saw this from a mile away of just kind of got signed with the team because he was just the best free agent center, not just because he was good. And now he's kind of in that position right now. As you mentioned, it's Saka, Pasternak, and Geeky's the top line. So it's this weird situation that, you know, nothing against Marchand, but I'd much be rather to be with Pasternak than Marchand. So maybe you might want to see if you could do a trade with someone still interested in the name Lindholm. But honestly, I'm just not a fan of the team as a whole. And if you're not with Pasternak on even strength, at least, you know, the power play might be enough of a name to ship him off to someone less suspecting, but I don't like him at all.
Believe it or not, I actually think he's still providing decent value for where people drafted him this year. The draft stock was so low that I think this is kind of what he was being drafted at. I think the people who drafted him wanted more, but I'm actually okay holding him in a couple leagues because I'm like, I spent like a 10th round pick. This is okay, I guess.
The thing that I like to look at is that maybe he might meet your spot, but depending on how your roster is, say, for example, if he was on mine, I'd be much more interested if you have like a streamer that looks interesting that could become a potential hold. He's that potential spot of being a progress stopper. So like if you're still what interesting, sure, keep him around because he's not giving you zeros. But if you have, say, like a person that ends up looking like a potential season-long hold or a multi-week hold, say if you got like a goalie got injured and you got the chance for the backup and you need to drop a forward, I would not hesitate to drop Lindholm for someone that's going to give you long-term value.
Gotcha. Next up, as we teased earlier, another one from Downey. This is a Casey Mittelstadt. I'm kind of wait and see on this one. Like, I think he's going to lose the deployment, and if he does, he's gone. But if he somehow keeps power play one and, you know, if he's playing second line with Rantanen and Drouin or something, or Rantanen and Nichushkin, that's actually a pretty decent spot to be in. What do you think?
I'm in the same boat as you, and the nice thing is that they play Friday and Monday coming up. It's their next two games, so you got some off-night games that you're going to actually keep Mittelstadt into your lineup, and then I would even, like, because of that Monday, even if it doesn't look good on, you know, the opening, like, practice that he's off of it. Maybe they have a bad game tomorrow and then they flip it up. So I would still give him at least those two games and then see how it is before making a decision, even if it's good or bad.
That makes sense to me. Gustav Forsling from me, 96% owned. This is one that I've been harping on all season. I don't think he was draft worthy at the beginning of the year, and I still don't think he's ownable. He's not getting any power play time. His periffs have never been great for a defenseman. His point pace is actually identical to the last 3 years. So don't expect anything more than what you're getting now from Forsling. Like, if his current fantasy points average is ownable in your league, keep rolling him. But in most leagues, he should not be owned. He should definitely not be 96% owned in a cupful.
Yeah, it's one of those situations of a good player doesn't always equal as a good fantasy player. I'm 100% with you.
Next up, Stefan Nason, 94% owned. I was a bit surprised by that one. That may be because of a streamer this week from Tacos Overflow. He's top power play and playing with Hischier. I'm kind of willing to ride it out because he's actually been getting goals and like the power play time is working out for him. He's done really well on the power play, and he was a bit of a power play specialist with Carolina too. So I think I'm holding Nason.
Oh yeah, I'm 100% with you. It's like, I look at him as like a Dorofiev kind of equivalent of like, I was just wanting a piece of the top power play, even if his other deployment wasn't the greatest. And the nice thing is that even on top of that, is that I believe it was maybe last game or the game before he got that upgrade to the Hischier line. So he's even better in that situation. So honestly, like, if he was dropped in my division, I would be tempted to literally spend every dollar of fab that I had to cap him, just because I have a feeling with those goals that he gets and his line mates, that is a very interesting thing that even if you get, you know, a 0 point or like, you know, he hits enough that you might get like a 1 kakuffle point, a 2 kakuffle point, and then a 10 kakuffle point night, and it all averages out nice. So I'm willing to ride the highs and the lows with him as long as he keeps his current deployment.
Yeah, I think similar to Raquel, I definitely like him better than Raquel, but similar to Raquel, as soon as he loses that power play one deployment, I think I have no interest anymore, or very quickly, very short leash with that. Only a couple more here. Another one that I added myself. Lucas Dostal's 80% owned. I'm totally fine cutting him. I know I'm a bit quick on the trigger here, but with Gibson back, I think it's a 50-50 for the foreseeable future, and the Ducks are terrible. So it's not even like you're getting a 50-50 with the Washington goalies or last year's Boston goalies. I have a hard time seeing Dostal being worth owning for the rest of the season, unless, you know, he takes over the 1A or Gibson gets traded.
Yeah, I might be willing to keep him just for a little bit longer because he's probably in line to get the Friday game and they have a back-to-back on Monday, Tuesday. But honestly, probably it would be maybe kind of looking at it the same as Middlestat, is that just take this as the trial run. Maybe Gibson gets hurt because he always gets hurt, or, you know, one play is really better than the other. But I wouldn't be, you know, if it's a 50-50 and you're unsure, I'd be on the cut side. But maybe just because of the chance of getting two games in a few days, I'd keep him, but feel free to cut him after that.
I actually don't think he's in line for the Friday start, assuming they're alternating. He played the Wednesday game and played decently, but still took the loss. I think if he's starting twice in a week, like if you can set your clock to the alternating, then you can do it.
Thank you for the correction there. Yeah. So with that, then I'm with you. Is that you could probably even drop him now and then pick him up for the game that he gets, because I don't think anyone's going to be rushing it. If someone spends the fab, that's fab on someone that actually matters that you could pick up later. So feel free to cut.
Next up, we have a couple of real quick ones, two quick ones, and then one in the chat that we'll get to at the end. Lewis said, Jordan Eberle. I'm 100% out on Eberle. I did not believe his 5 goals on 9 shots to start the season, and things have not gotten better. They may turn around a bit when Dunn returns, just a bit more offense, but the Kraken are a low-scoring team that spreads the offense, which is death for fantasy. And next, Elon has Paul Cotter. I have him as a definite cut. He actually has had a decent run of points lately, but it's clearly unsustainable. He's taking like less than 1 shot per game over the last couple. The hits are trending down a bit, and New Jersey has a Thursday-Saturday schedule next week, which is not particularly conducive to streaming him. Any additional comments on those two?
100% on board with what you said there.
And then I see in the chat, Patty's asking about Anton Lundell. Do you have any gut reaction to that? I know we didn't get time to research that.
No, is that for me, this is one of those situations, as I mentioned before, where the player is good, but he might not translate fantasy-wise, is that I love him. I had him with when Barkov was out, and he was basically saved by a few weeks when Barkov was out. But on that third line, not on the top power play, he's nothing more at this point of like, I look at like, I'd probably even want Rodriguez more now. I think Rodriguez is on the third line today, but like if Rodriguez was on like in the top six, I would be more interested in him over Lundell. But if there's ever an injury or maybe like a 4-game stream of Gabby week, I'd be fine to pick up Lundell, but I don't see him as a season-long hold if he's living in the third line.
I definitely agree. He's a cut now. Lundell's probably a high-end streamer for me. Like if I see Florida has a 4-game week, I'm looking to add him maybe a couple days early to really make sure I get him. And yeah, I agree. If Bennett or Barkov are out long-term and he ends up in the top six or even better on power play one, that's a fantastic add. With that, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed our show, please consider joining the Keeping Carlson Patreon group at keepingcarlson.com/patron, where you can play in the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League, the Cupful, where we got our ownership percentages from today. And you can interact with Brian, Elon, myself, Shams, Lewis, all of the patrons that you heard, and more. Please check out www.gamedaytweets.com to get all the best info from Twitter without having to slog through the rest of that place, including team-by-team and searchable tweets by player name and goalie start predictions. Visit that site and the other great sites we use to research our episodes at, but Yahoo, Frozen Tools, and Natural Stature. Our intro and outro music was created by Pat Roach. Until we see you next time, play smart and keep your shifts short.